Peter and Antonin, Genevieve mutters. There should be an Aran woman at the head of your armies. Instead, you choose a priestess. If Natalia were here, she would have chosen Margaret Boleyn. She was no fool. She knew how to put the war gift to use. Genevieve lifts her chin toward the other council members on horseback. Peter and Antonin, waiting on thick, black chargers, and Bree Westwood, on a light brown mare. Why her, then? The priestess who sends my messages will be more comfortable if she is there. She looks through the ranks for Elizabeth, in her white and black robe, but does not see her. Perhaps she will join them as they ride. But Bree Westwood? Catherine groans. Perhaps I am bringing Bree Westwood in hopes that she will die. She presses a heel to her horse's side to move him off. Though she is no longer poisoning Catherine to the brink of a scream, Genevieve can still put a strain on a perfectly good day. Catherine turns her horse in a slow circle, watching his breath puff in a small cloud as they pass the waiting soldiers. Innisfool Valley will be frozen and covered in snow, a clean white field for her army to tromp through. In her veins, the dead queens call for blood. They show it to her in vulgar images of snow-stained red, cold mud and flesh churned into each other. Quiet, quiet, she murmurs and flexes her fists, wondering what she would find if she looked inside her gloves. Live, pale fingers or black, rotten ones? She catches Peter's eye, and he smiles at her just as Roe returns, half-dragging and half-escorting their prisoner. Bind her hands and put her on a horse, a sweet palfrey who will not be easily startled. What of the bird? Roe holds up a burlap sack. It beats like a heart as the crow inside flaps nervous wings. I could put it in a cage, leave it here. She will not die without it. How can you trade me without my familiar? Madrigal asks and jerks out of Roe's grasp. She is filthy from the cells, but still her loveliness shines through, even past her resentful, miserable scowl. Catherine has always thought of naturalists as a rugged sort, suited for working with their hands and bathing every other week. But this one is not like that. This one has been pampered. Or maybe you don't really mean to trade me. Catherine takes a deep breath. Keep your crow in line. If I allow her to come and she tries to fly, I will put a bolt in her chest myself. Do you understand? Madrigal nods. Roe reaches into the sack and pulls the crow out, flapping. Once released, she dives directly for Madrigal's arms and stays there. Tether them together, Catherine orders. Give it just enough room to hop from hand to shoulder. You'll never get my jewels, Madrigal says, after she has been put onto her horse. If you truly hoped to, you should have kidnapped someone else. My daughter doesn't even like me. She is not even going to show up. Sunpool. You've chosen the warriors who are going with you? Yes. Well, Amelia did. Arsinoe and Jules sit together before the hearth, watching the fire crackle and burn. It's been a bit of a wonder. Arsinoe tears into a chunk of bread and drags it through the stew broth left from her dinner. When she had shown up at Jules' door after being ousted, or ousting herself, from the room she shared with Billy and Mirabella, Jules had immediately called for more food. Watching Amelia these last days, she's hard not to listen to. She does know how to give orders. The corner of Jules' mouth crooks upward. You don't like her. I don't trust her, Arsinoe corrects. But she cares about you. Jules bends and spoons up the last of the stew to drop onto Arsinoe's plate. Sorry, there's not much, and sorry there's no poison in it. I'm not enough of a poisoner to miss it. though you're right about the quantity. The loaf of bread was small, and she could have only a plate and a half of the stew, but it is good, rich and full of root vegetables and meat. Thank you for coming with me, Jules says.
Don't thank me, Arsinoe replies. Thank Mirabella and Billy.
Me? You never even had to ask.
I didn't think I'd ever see you again, Jules says,
and Arsinoe feels Camden's tail wrap affectionately around her ankle.
I always knew I'd see you.
Arsinoe sips from a cup of warmed, watered wine.
Somehow, I knew.
Jules smiles and takes up her own cup. They knock them together and drink a while, watching the fire.
So, what do you think you'll find up the mountain?
I've no idea. I'm just going to learn what I can.
She glances at Jules from the corner of her eye.
You're not afraid? About tomorrow? Or worried about any of this?
The only thing I'm afraid of, Jules says, the only thing I regret, is that I can't do this alone, that others have to risk themselves with me.
Arsinoe sighs. More has changed than just your hair, she jokes, and Jules laughs and punches her.
This quest you're going on, Jules says. It isn't dangerous, is it?
Oh, don't start that again. You're the Legion Queen now. It's not your job to look out for me, not that it ever was. But I sure did appreciate it.
She sets her plate on the floor for Camden to lick and heaves up out of the chair.
Where are you going? Jules asks.
Big day tomorrow. Don't you think we ought to get some sleep?
I suppose so. Though someday I'd like to hear more about what it's like on the mainland.
Arsinoe smiles.
Someday, I'll tell you.
That night, Arsinoe dreams a Blue Queen dream for the first time since deciding to return to the island. But it is not like the other dreams. This dream is of the mist, and of the bodies inside it, torn apart, choked, rotting. This dream is a blanket of white closing in around her friends, around Jules and Camden, and Billy and Mirabella, blotting out the island and carving up everything it touches. It ends with the Shadow Queen crouched on her chest, her long, cold fingers pressed against Arsinoe's head. She does not speak. She still cannot. But Arsinoe knows what she means. Innisfool Valley. The Queen's army sets up camp on the eastern side of the valley, spreading tents and horses and soldiers like black ants across the snow-dusted field and all the way through the cliffs to the frozen beach. Antonin and Ro send scouts up the cliffside. Nothing that moves through the valley will escape their attention, and no crafty rebel force can creep up on them from behind.
There has never been a war like this, Peter says, staring out at the soldiers, some of whom seem no more than girls still in their freckles. A rebel against a queen. It has been a long time since we have seen war of any kind. So who knows what to expect?
This is not a war, Peter, says Catherine. This is a trade. It will not come to fighting.
You seem very certain.
He brushes his knuckles across her cheekbone.
Are you all right here, Cat? So close to the Breccia domain?
Her mouth crooks. I wondered about that. That deep, dark place. Her eyes flicker toward the southern woods.
I can feel it, opening and closing like a mouth. And they feel it too.
His hand slides into hers. He feels the cold of her, even through the gloves.
Part of them is still down there, Peter. Part of them always will be.
Do you want to go to it?
Never. I will never return to it again. I could never be sure whether I would be able to stand, or if I would dive straight down inside.
She sighs, and he feels her press close. His wicked little cat,
whom he cannot get enough of.
Come, she says, her breath hot in his ear. Close the tent flap and lie with me a while. No one will notice we are gone. No one will interrupt us once they hear the sounds that I am making.
I cannot, my pet.
He steps out of her reaching embrace, though he would much rather fall into it. He must be careful, so close to carrying out his plans. With Katerine wrapped around him, he forgets how to think. And the last time they were together, he devoured her so desperately, he was sure he had given away his fears.
Roe will bellow, if I do not help with the soldiers.
He takes her gloved hand and turns it over to kiss the bare skin of her wrist, to feel her pulse against his lips. She says she is fine so near the Breccia, but she is not. With the source of them close by, they have changed her. He can feel their influence turning her sharp, like she was during the ascension when they sought the crown. The closer they marched to Innisfool, the more she barked at the soldiers, the more poison she ate at meals, the more she hunted with her horse and crossbow. He saw her shoot down a hawk in flight with perfect war gift aim. He watched her skin a rabbit like removing a glove and lick the blood from her fingers. He backs out of the tent, leaving Katerine to rest or pout, and turns and runs directly into the High Priestess.
Luca, forgive me.
It is all right. I am nothing if not sturdy. Is the Queen inside?
Yes,
he says and steps out of the way. But Luca seems to change her mind.
Walk with me a moment, will you, Peter?
As she leads him through the encampment, she pauses every few steps to lay a blessing on the head of this person or that, soldiers who touch her robes as they pass, or simply drop to one knee.
What is wrong, Master Aaron? You have seen these blessings before.
Of course. They just remind me of who you are. I suppose in our close quarters on the Black Council, you have become less the High Priestess and more Luca to me.
I have lost my mystique.
Luca laughs.
Well, in the capital, none of these soldiers would do more than step out of my way. But all regain their faith in the face of a coming battle.
Queen Katerine is still sure it will not be a fight.
And I hope she is correct.
But you do not think she is.
Luca bites her lower lip and tilts her head thoughtfully.
I think this rebellion has come too far to end without a battle.
She folds her hands.
Did you ever discover a solution for the problem we discussed? The problem of spiritual possession?
It was not a problem, only a curiosity.
Ah.
They pass by the priestess's tent and come upon Bree and Elizabeth. Bree nods when she sees him, but when she looks upon Luca, her lips press together in a firm line.
Is that?
Peter asks, and points to a small black-and-white woodpecker climbing about on Elizabeth's robes.
It is.
Elizabeth scoops him up and shows him to Peter happily.
He rejoined us this morning. Flew into my chest so hard, he nearly pierced my heart.
He seems very proud of himself.
The bird, once again in Elizabeth's lap, crawls up and down her legs excitedly and makes small chirping sounds.
He has been like this since he returned, says Bree. We have fed and watered him, but he will not be calm.
Perhaps he is proud.
No, he's trying to tell me something.
Elizabeth reaches down to stroke his back, and he pecks her hard between the fingers.
Ouch! And he's getting very upset that I'm not understanding what it is.
Peter glances at Luca, who has fallen silent, watching the bird.
Well, I am sure you will figure it out.
Sunpool. Just after dawn, Jules and Arsinoe stand together near the city gate, the stone of the square stretched out before them. The edges are crowded with what appears to be the entire rebellion, risen early to see their leader off.
Seems like I should be more tired, Jules says. We hardly got a wink of sleep.
Nor me, says Arsinoe as Camden yawns.
Soon enough, Amelia and Mathilde will arrive with the small band of warriors and Mirabella and Billy, who have gone to the stable with them. Jules lets go of a shaky exhale and looks Arsinoe up and down. Arsinoe tugs at her cloak and the coat underneath.
You look like a real mainlander in Billy's clothes.
Ha! Can you believe they nearly fit?
Arsinoe holds up her arms.
Then she frowns.
Listen, Jules, I can't go with you after Madrigal.
What?
Arsinoe, I've got to go on. I've got to go up the mountain. I can't explain it, I just know I have to.
Can't it wait, even a few more days?
We'll ride fast through the pass to the valley.
No, I'm sorry. If there'd been more time, if I'd told you more of what I'd seen, what I'd dreamed, maybe you'd understand.
She puts a hand on her friend's shoulder.
But it will be fine, Jules.
You don't really need me anyway. Mira is more than enough.
Jules frowns.
It would just feel better, having you there with me.
I know.
I wish... Arsinoe starts, but doesn't know how to finish.
Are you sure?
I can't wait around for you to change your mind.
Hoofbeats clatter, and the warriors trot into the square with Amelia leading on a horse as red as blood. A dozen warriors ride behind her, and Mathilde and Billy ride beside. Mirabella brings up the rear on a dappled gray, looking oddly uncomfortable on horseback.
15, Arsinoe says.
You can bet Catarine will bring 1,500.
We won't need that number. It is an ambush, not a battle, remember?
Jules and Arsinoe go forward to meet her mount, a stunning black gelding with four white stockings and a crescent on his forehead.
Isn't that Catarine's horse?
Jules takes the reins and grins as she leaps onto his back.
The same one I stole the day of the hunt.
She pats his neck.
And still every bit as game as when he carried you half-dead through the mountains.
How fitting.
Arsinoe strokes his nose.
You should give him a name.
Or maybe I'll just ask Catarine what it is.
Amelia rides up close.
Another scout has returned, she says. Catarine has reached the valley and set up camp. She has put the war-gifted priestess, Ro Mertra, at the head of her army.
A fine thing, Mathilde adds sarcastically, ousting the warrior on the council and replacing her with a warrior priestess who, by the laws of the temple, should not acknowledge her gift. We are not the only ones shedding the old ways.
The horses shift, and Arsinoe is jostled out of the way, farther from Jules as she greets her warriors. On the edges of the square, the rest of her army waits, silent. A united army of many gifts. Soldiers with hawks on their shoulders, others with flickers of flame darting across their knuckles, and many with the seer's steely eyes and bright white braids.
She should bring more, says Arsinoe, as Mirabella and Billy maneuver their horses to stand close by.
No, the seer is right, says Mirabella. They are not ready, and still too few. If they stood before the Queen's Guard now, most would die. She turns her eager horse in a tight circle. With her hair obscured by the scarf and hood, and in her mainlander clothes, she could truly be anyone.
They're whispering about you now that you ride with the Legion Queen, Billy notes. Wondering who you are. Why don't you take the hood down and show them?
Mirabella shakes her head. Amelia is still unsure. She wants me to stay hidden unless I am forced to show myself.
She glances at Arsinoe pointedly.
And I agree with her.
Arsinoe, do you want help into the saddle? Billy asks.
I am not coming,
Arsinoe says and winces.
What?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for getting you into this, first volunteering and then not going myself. But I have to go to the mountain. I saw her again last night. The shadow. She made me dream of the mist and showed me what it could do.
Mirabella and Billy look at each other. And Billy shrugs and slides down from his horse.
Then I'm not going either, he says. I'm coming with you.
Mirabella presses her lips together, and Arsinoe holds her breath. Jules's plan will not work without her.
I will still go, Mirabella says finally.
Are you sure? Arsinoe asks and exhales.
Yes. You go and take care of the mist.
I will take care of our little sister.
She looks at Arsinoe with a gentle expression.
And I will look after Jules. I promise.
Look after yourself, too, Arsinoe says. If our sister sees you...
I have not been poisoned this time. This time, if she sees me, it will be different. Very different.
Amelia wheels her horse and canters around the group in a tight circle. The riders put heels to their mounts and make for the gate.
Time to go, Mirabella says, and clicks to the dappled gray awkwardly.
I never knew you couldn't ride. I can, she calls over her shoulder as she bounces away. I just spent more time in carriages.
Arsinoe grunts as Camden jumps up and puts her paws on Arsinoe's chest.
Jules has turned back and rides toward her and Billy with a regretful face.
You'll be left behind, says Billy.
I'm their leader, and they can't go far without me.
Jules smiles.
She is afraid, but she is also exhilarated. She will ride hard to catch up. She will charge the field. She has become a warrior.
Are you too sure you'll be all right? I've heard Mount Horn is an unforgiving place.
Are you sure you'll be all right? Arsinoe asks, but instead of answering, Jules reaches into her saddlebag and pulls out a knife. She tosses it to Arsinoe handle first.
Take your bear with you, at least, she says, and rides away.
Camden gives Arsinoe's cheek another lick before running off after Jules. After the ambush party is gone, the square empties. The rebels return to their work, preparing weapons and storing food, repairing the city that is worn down and crumbled over the centuries. It is strange to watch them return so quickly to their task, while Arsinoe stares after Jules and Mirabella until long after they are out of sight. Finally, she and Billy gather up their packs. No one pays them any mind, even when the scarf slips down and reveals Arsinoe's scars. They leave through the main gate and keep the mountain in their sights. Billy rummages in his pack and pulls out a small bundle of papers.
I've been looking over maps. Well, what maps I could find here, and trying to determine the best route to take, he says. A girl who lives in a village near the western foot says there are caves, and a good-sized one, if we follow the trail along this stream.
He riffles through the papers and holds up a map of Mount Horn.
The last stretch will be a slightly difficult climb, but I think it's our best shot. Will that be far enough up to satisfy the Blue Queen, do you think?
I don't know, Arsinoe replies, studying the route. The cave he indicates is still farther up the mountain than she wanted to go.
I hope so.
I can't believe you almost let me go with Jules and Mira.
Why didn't you ask me to stay?
I didn't think of it, and I figured you were still angry.
Is that it? Or are you just trying to politely get rid of me? You keep trying to leave me behind. Should I be taking the hint?
No, I...
Because I don't want to keep on where I'm not wanted.
Of course I...
She growls in frustration, and they are both suddenly very aware she is still holding the knife that Jules gave her.
What are you going to do? He asks. Gut me?
Of course not. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what lies at the top of that mountain. But I do know that it's all for the hope of something else, a future somewhere with you.
And I'm sorry I can't say that when I'm not holding you at knife point, all right?
All right, he says and grins. His grin changes to a grimace as she uses the knife to cut into her palm. And now you're slicing your hand open.
I'm calling Braddock, like Jules suggested.
She walks to the nearest tree and smears her blood against the bark.
Will that even work, after all this time?
Arsinoe smiles. She was not sure whether it would either. But the moment her blood touches the tree, she feels him. Somewhere not too far away, she feels him lift his big brown head and sniff the air.
Innisfool Valley. Peter creeps away to the Breccia domain toward evening, when the sun is fading to a winter orange, but while there is still plenty of light to see by. And even then, he steps carefully, wary of the treacherous pit. The heart of the island, it is called, but it truly is more like a mouth, a fissure in the earth made of mouths and eyes and ears to hear him coming. The Breccia domain lies before him in the clearing, looking innocent, but he is not fooled.
You had your chance to eat me the last time we met, he says, tying a rope around his waist. This time, I will eat my fill of you instead.
He winds the rope around the sturdiest tree he can find, and then around another for good measure. The tools tucked into his belt should serve him well enough. A trowel and hammer, a handheld pick, and a sack to carry the rocks. Madrigal did not say how large the stones should be, nor how large a circle he would require. She was not much of a low magic teacher. He braces his feet against the edge and takes a deep breath. With his head above ground, he still smells clean air and fresh snow. As usual, there is no birdsong, no sound of any kind, except his nervous breathing and thumping heartbeat. He wraps his anchor rope around his arm 3 times, and the breccia seems to yawn open to receive him.
Not this time, you wicked pit.
Peter stands over the edge, secured to the trees, and swings his hammer against the stones. It takes longer than he hoped, so long that he loses the sun and must labor in the dark. His shoulders shaking, he finally dislodges a final piece of rock and drops it into his sack. He does not have enough, but it is all he is capable of. After securing the stones in his tent, he slips through the camp, past soldiers' cookfires, to find the tent where Madrigal is kept.
I need to speak to the prisoner, he says.
The guard nods and steps just outside.
Give us some space.
Yes, Master Aaron.
His name isn't Aaron, though, is it? Madrigal sings from inside.
It's Renard.
Peter ducks into the tent and scowls at her in the lamplight.
The Aaron in me is what counts. I need you to tell me the rest of the spell.
She holds up her hands, still bound.
I do not care, he snaps. You have my word. I will try when the time comes, but in case something goes wrong, I need to know the rest. I could only get a few stones, not enough for a full circle, not one touching end to end. So what do I do?
Get more?
Madrigal raises her eyebrows, then sighs.
Very well. Close the circle with something else. Start staining rope with your blood. Set the stones inside the rope, and it should do.
Then what?
Get the queen inside the circle. Carve this rune, she traces it lightly in the earth, into your hand.
I will never remember that.
Fine, give me a knife.
She cocks her head, exasperated when he hesitates.
Just a small one.
He hands one to her. Now give me your palm. He gasps as she slices into it, making curving cuts that fill with red. There, just reopen those scabs when the time is right. Press the blood to her skin.
carve the same mark into her, and return every last ghost into the stones.
I do not want to cut her.
You don't have a choice. Queen's blood is the key. It makes all the difference.
Believe me.
The Western Woods. Mirabella and Jules wait together deep in the woods that border Innisfool Valley to the west. The warriors, and even Mathilde, have gone ahead, disappearing into the bare winter trees on foot to scout and spy on Catarine's army, leaving them to do nothing but wait and listen to the horses munch grain in their feed bags.
They should be back by now, Jules says, from atop Catarine's black gelding.
There is a lot of ground between here and the valley. It takes time to cover on foot, even more when one is trying to tread quietly.
How would you know? Jules asks.
I would not, Mirabella shrugs. I was only trying to make you feel better.
No doubt you think them all fools, following me here, calling me a queen on the basis of faith and a prophecy murky as a mud puddle.
Mirabella chooses her words with care. Jules Malone is as feisty as Arsinoe, only feisty of a different sort. Less impulsive, but more easily offended.
All prophecy is ambiguous.
Ambiguous, murky. May be a queen again, she snorts. Maybe. Can't they ever say anything for certain?
She pauses to listen for the sound of anyone returning.
It must really stick in your craw. Them referring to me as a queen. Even a queen in title only.
Mirabella swallows. To be a Fenburn queen was to be of the line, a queen in the blood. That was what she had always been told and taught by the temple.
It bothers me, too, to be honest, says Jules, reading her silence. Feels like the High Priestess is going to come and knock me on the back of the head.
She turns towards some unheard sound, unheard to Mirabella at least, as the mountain cat's ears perk up as well. Soon enough, though, the footsteps are plain. Six of their party, returning through the trees with Amelia and Mathilde in the lead.
Well? Jules asks.
She has made camp on the eastern edge of the valley, butted up against the cliffs and spilled out onto the beach, Amelia says. Scouts are positioned up high, to the north and south, as far as the cliffs allow. But we saw no sign of anyone in the western woods, nor past the west edge of the valley. It is almost like she truly intends to trade.
Pity for her.
The warriors behind Amelia smile. They are armed with swords, throwing knives, and crossbows. Three carry longbows larger than any Mirabella has ever seen. She does not need to ask to know that the others have remained in the woods, ready and waiting to strike.
There is no perfect place to ambush, Amelia goes on. We will have to draw her out of the clearing somehow and into the trees.
You will have to play the bait, Jules.
I can do that.
I know. And I will do it with you.
Did you see my mother in the camp?
Only the tent where she's being kept, Amelia replies. And Mathilde thought she heard the croaking of a crow.
Arya. Jules glances at Mirabella and explains, her familiar.
What about me? Mirabella asks.
We have found a place for you to the south, up a tree, if you can manage.
I have been up trees before.
Amelia cocks her eyebrow.
There will be no quick escape from there if something goes wrong.
I will not need one.
Then go. 1 hour to take positions before we send a bird to the poisoner to let her know we are here.
Mirabella looks at Jules. Despite the band of warriors and the strong mountain cat by her side, Jules is afraid. Legion cursed or not, she is outnumbered, and Catarine is a true queen, a fierce queen, to hear the tales told now, who might no longer freeze at the sight of Jules like she did in the arena the day of the duel.
Seeing Mirabella's look, Jules puts on a brave smile.
It'll be all right. Go with Mathilde.
Take care, Jules. Arsinoe will have my head if I let any harm befall you or Camden.
It won't come to that.
We ambush the trade and run, like we planned. You be careful yourself. Arsinoe'll have my head, too, if you don't return with us.
Mirabella nods and goes with Mathilde into the trees. The seer is fast afoot, and so silent that she makes Mirabella feel like a herd of goats, snapping twigs and crunching leaves as she moves. Finally, they reach the tree. It is a good tree for climbing, with broad, well-spaced branches.
If you brace in the second fork, you will have the best view, says Mathilde.
Mirabella grasps the lowest branch.
This is too far. I won't be able to see properly.
Amelia wants you to stay hidden, so stay hidden if you can.
She thinks the warriors are quick enough and stealthy enough to save Jules' mother without your help.
Mirabella arches her brow.
For what it is worth, Mathilde says. I don't agree. I have scented the wind today, and it reeks of blood.
So, Mirabella sputters, what do I do?
Be ready.
The seer turns and disappears between the trunks. Mirabella sniffs the air, detects nothing in it but crisp, cold snow. Oracles, she mutters, and climbs into the tree.
Mount Horn. Braddock finds Arsinoe and Billy at the foot of the mountain. He emerges from behind the scrub brush with an exuberant roar and frightens Billy so badly that he falls backward onto the grass.
Braddock, he squeaks. Is it him? It is him, isn't it?
But there is no time to wonder as the bear promptly steps over him and lumbers to Arsinoe to press his nose happily into her scabby palm.
Braddock!
She wraps her arms around his neck and strokes the fur between his ears.
You found us! And a good thing, too. I was starting to feel faint.
She had painted trees with her blood every mile or so since they departed from Sunpool.
Does he remember me as well? Billy asks, brushing himself off.
He didn't eat you. I think that's a good sign.
Cautiously, Billy approaches and lays a hand on the bear's rump. A trembling hand. Braddock he may be, but he is still a great brown bear and large as a horse.
He looks wonderful, doesn't he?
She stuffs her face into his shiny coat.
Kara must be helping him fish and forage. Not bad eating with a naturalist around, is it, boy?
It's good to see him, Billy says, casting an eye up the mountain. But he might not be able to stay with us for long. The path up to the cave might be too hard, and...
Stop doing that, he adds, as he watches Arsinoe feed the bear more than a day's ration of dried meat. I have to reward him for coming. It's winter, you know. He would much rather be in his den or in the warm stable at the Black Cottage, snoozing with the mule.
Fine, but no more. He can hunt for himself, but we need food for the journey back to Sunpool.
He waits for a response, but she only snuggles farther into her bear.
Arsinoe, there will be a journey back, won't there? You never really told me what's waiting for us at the top of this mountain.
That's because I don't know. I'm not keeping some great secret. All I know is that Daphne wants me there, that she'll speak to me.
Which could mean 100 things.
Are you regretting not going with Mira and Jules?
No, of course not.
They continue with the bear in tow, making their way through the trees, upward and upward toward the snow line. The path in the lower elevation is not that difficult, and Braddock keeps up easily and finds plenty of cold berries to forage along the way. That night, they stop at a broad stretch of the trail and build a small fire. Braddock lies down and lets Arsinoe and even Billy cuddle up in his side.
On second thought, says Billy, maybe we will try to bring him all the way. It'll only get harder to light a fire, and he's sure to stay plenty warm.
He slides an arm around her, careful not to jostle the bear too much.
We should have kept Mira back, too. We could be toasty and dry all the way to the cave.
Do you think she's all right?
Arsinoe asks. Do you think they both are?
I think if they weren't, we'd have heard Mira storm all the way across the mountain.
Arsinoe glances up at the peak of Mount Horn. She hopes the cave will be good enough for Daphne, and they will not have to go any farther. If they rise early and climb hard, they may reach it by nightfall and not have to camp on the steeper mountainside.
Do you know what I'm afraid of? She asks.
What?
I'm afraid to reach this cave and find nothing inside. That it was all a joke, a ploy to bring us back here, or a trick of my own mind.
Funny.
He kisses her head.
That's what I would like to happen. But I don't think that it will.
Arsinoe snuggles closer to him, entwining their legs, and lets her hands roam until he inhales sharply.
Arsinoe, he grins, not in front of the bear.
She grins back. The bear doesn't mind. But as soon as their movements disturb him, Braddock gets up with a grunt and goes to lie someplace else. Innisfool Valley.
How many cavalry soldiers can you knock from their horses with your gift?
I don't know, Jules asks. How many can you?
Amelia shrugs.
Two? Perhaps three, if their seat is no good. Certainly not 100, which is how many horses she seems to have brought.
They lie on their backs in the snow, watching the clouds go by overhead. It is a clear, quiet day. Either not many of the Queen's soldiers are elementals, or none of them is the least bit nervous. As for Mirabella, somewhere up a tree to the southeast, well, she knows how to mask her gift.
If this goes wrong, Amelia, you have to promise to let me go through with the trade.
Jules turns her head, but Amelia will not look at her.
I will not promise that.
She's my mother. And my little brother needs her.
Amelia half rolls onto her shoulder and stretches her neck back to peer toward the valley.
The others should be in position now.
Camden growls, and the warrior grins, reaches down and scratches her shoulder. Even your cat wants to fight, like she is touched with the war gift as well. If you trade yourself, what am I supposed to do with her?
Hold her back. Don't let her follow.
Amelia and Camden regard each other. The cougar seems fairly sure she would win that argument.
It's time, Amelia says. Send a bird to the queen. Let her know you are here.
The bird that the rebels send is a hawk. Unmistakable in its message, it swoops low through the army camp, every so often sounding its sharp, piercing cry. When Katarine emerges from her tent, it flies directly onto her arm, the insolent thing. She grits her teeth and strokes its chest feathers as its talons needle through her glove. Then she tosses it back up into the air and watches it fly back to the west end of the meadow.
Horses?
Peter asks as he comes up behind her buttoning his shirt and Queen's Guard coat.
Or shall we go on foot?
Horses, she replies.
The dead war queens have lent her plenty of their gift today, and she will be ready for anything. With the arrival of the hawk, her queen's guard comes alive, arming themselves and falling into formation. Though many of her soldiers are older than she, some are old enough to have served under the last queen, and she walks through them with a sense of pride. They are hers now. She reaches out and rattles a spear held in a girl's shaking wrist.
No need for courage today, she smiles. You are simply an escort for queen and prisoner.
She mounts her horse, who looks twice his normal size in light armor, and takes a long shield to hold on her right. Madrigal will ride to her left, and Peter on Madrigal's far side.
Keep the army to the rear, she says to Roe, who holds her horse's bridle. Do not seem a threat. We do not want Jules Malone to turn tail and run.
She takes up her reins, and Peter rides close, tucking a sharp knife into his belt.
Are you all right, Cat?
Are you ready?
Yes, she says, without looking at him. Perhaps she should have left him behind. In Peter's eyes and beneath his gaze, she is Cat, little Katarine, only herself, and she cannot be that today, not until the trade is over. The crowd parts as the prisoner is brought near. Madrigal Malone sits astride an old gray mare, her hands bound behind her back. Her crow, familiar, rests docilely on her shoulder, still tethered to her wrist.
Are you looking forward to seeing your daughter? Katarine asks.
More than you should be.
Katarine leans over and pushes the woman's hair out of her eyes. She tucks it behind her ear and smooths it down, revealing some of that unsinkable prettiness. She is so lovely, but of so little substance. Only a regular-sized woman, despite that beauty. Though they were of similar height, Natalia would have towered over Madrigal Malone and covered her in shadow.
Do not be afraid, she says gently, when Madrigal flinches. I will not hurt you. I swear, that is not why we have come.
You can't hurt me, Madrigal mutters.
Katarine clicks at the mare and tugs her along, keeping her close enough that Madrigal's toe occasionally bumps into her heel. She looks over her shoulder, where her army stands waiting.
No!
Turning around, she sees it before anyone. The mist, rising over the water of Longmorrow Bay.
Not now! Peter?
He twists in the saddle, just as the soldiers farthest away on the beach begin to scream. The mist spreads, slow and thick, through the path between the cliffs and into the meadow. She watches it creep up over the cliff tops, watches it swallow her lookouts.
Cat, what do we do?
It does not matter,
Katarine replies, as her army breaks ranks and scatters. From her perch up in the tree, Mirabella sees the mist roll out over the sand of the beach and crawl up the sides of the cliffs. At first, she thinks it is only a storm, some quirk of the weather. But as it swallows the first soldier, and the next, and she hears them scream. The mist, she whispers. She grasps onto the branches so hard the cold bark splits the skin of her hands. Her heart beats loudly as she watches the mist swirl over the terrified soldiers. To cloak them? To protect them? A shrill shriek draws her eyes as the mist rolls back, revealing a body twisted in two and pulled apart. The snow between the torso and legs is littered with entrails and spreading red. She does not know what to do. The mist has wound nearly the length of the valley, leaving some and maiming others, causing panic and confusion and swirling westward toward Katarine and Jules. If Mirabella stays her hand, it may all be resolved. The undead queen and the Legion queen destroyed in one stroke. Perhaps that is what the Blue Queen wants. What the island wants. Perhaps she was brought there only to witness.
No.
Mirabella slides down the trunk. She jumps from the lowest branch and winces as her ankle rolls. All those innocent soldiers, the servants, the priestesses she saw in their white robes. She does not know what is wrong with the mist, but she knows that it is wrong. Mirabella runs as fast as she can toward the sounds of screaming, calling the wind and the storm up behind her. Katarine can only watch as her army comes apart, as the mist darts through them like wispy fingers, mangling them or swallowing them whole. The entire camp is in shambles, turned over tents, horses running loose to trample through supply stores, or over the tops of people the mist has taken and spun around.
Katarine, we have to get you to safety,
Peter shouts.
What safety?
Her head turns at the sound of hoofbeats. Roe is leading a band of cavalry, galloping for the cover of the trees. The priestess's face is hard as stone. Angry as Katarine is,
that there is no form to truly fight. The mist is almost upon them, creeping around to the sides.
How can it move so quickly, without seeming to move at all?
Ride! Peter calls to her. Follow Row!
He kicks his horse hard. He does not see the arm of white billow between them until it is too late.
Peter!
It's blocking us in, Madrigal screeches. Don't you see? We have to run.
Where?
Katarine drags her closer, the dead war queens infusing her with strength enough to pull Madrigal from her horse and across Katarine's pommel.
Right for the western woods? Right into your waiting rebel's arms? Are you mad? People are dying! But not us!
Katarine drops her shield and draws a long knife out of her boot. The mist is everywhere. She cannot see anything in all the white, not even the silhouette of a tree trunk. Her horse's hooves prance and kick up wisps like smoke. They are pocketed inside it, and she need only wait for it to rush into her lungs. Will she feel it, then? Pull her heart out through her mouth? Or twist her arms from their sockets?
Madrigal! Mother!
Katarine whirls as the mist around them thins. Jules Malone and her cougar stand at the edge of the trees. Her hand is raised.
I've come to trade!
No!
Madrigal shouts.
No, Jules, get out of here!
She tries to burst out of Katarine's grip, but Katarine's fingers are locked tight.
You cannot run yet!
Katarine cries.
Not yet!
Let go of me!
In a flurry of black feathers, Madrigal sends her crow at Katarine's face.
Mother! Stop struggling!
Jules calls, and Katarine looks at her through the haze. She is not alone.
Mirabella is running up behind her.
She is dressed in mainlander clothes, blue and gray, none of the black of Queens. But her regal face is unmistakable. At the sight of Mirabella, the dead queens surge through Katarine's blood. Their rage is so pure that it turns her vision red, even through the white of the mist. She cannot calm them or speak to them. And when Madrigal's bird flaps again in her face, the dead queens lash out. Katarine does not remember that she had drawn her knife until the blade is already buried deep in Madrigal's neck.
No,
she whispers, as the blood begins to pour from the wound. She looks into Madrigal's wide, surprised eyes.
I did not mean...
She presses her hand against the blood, but it is no use. The veins of Madrigal's throat have been cut, severed. Horrified, Katarine lets go, and Madrigal's body tumbles limply to the ground, her panicked crow still tethered to the dying woman's wrist. The next thing Katarine hears is an otherworldly scream. The next thing she feels is herself blown backward to land hard upon the snow, and her horse rolling over her foot. When Madrigal falls, Mirabella dashes past Jules to try and catch her. She sends her storm out into the mist ahead, pushes wind through her fingertips, and feels the clouds gather over the valley. She pushes harder, and the mist is blown back, creating a path for her straight to Madrigal. She is still strides away when an unseen force hits her from behind, throwing her forward hard to bounce against the ground. For an instant, everything is dark, and her storm begins to fizzle. But she shakes her head clear and goes on, scrambling on her hands and knees. Not far ahead, Katarine is on the ground, struggling beneath her horse. The horse itself is dead or knocked cold by the unseen blast. Mirabella ignores her and hurries to Jules's mother, lying in a bloody heap, her arm lifted by a crow desperately trying to fly away. She kneels beside the woman and turns her over. Madrigal's eyes roll toward her, white and panicked, as blood pours out of her neck. It is all right, Madrigal. Do not move now. Not knowing what else to do, she quickly unties the crow and lets her fly. It seems a relief,
to the bird and Madrigal both. We have to get you out of here.
No, she's...
Blood bubbles over her lips. She says more, but it is nearly impossible to understand.
She is full of them.
Full of what? Who is?
Full of dead.
Madrigal gurgles and grasps onto Mirabella's shoulder. She spits blood into the snow, presses her hand into it.
Stop her. Jules.
Hush now. The storm above rumbles, and rain falls hard onto the snow, driving it down and melting it as it does the same to the mist. Her wind drowns out the sound of thunder as it clears the valley of white, revealing stunned soldiers on their hands and knees. As the valley becomes visible once again, Mirabella turns back to Jules and the rebels to see if they were hurt by the blast. But Jules is fine, standing alone, with her hands thrust down in fists.
Madrigal, we have to go, Mirabella says.
But when she tries to lift her, she is heavy and dead in her arms. Jules screams again as her war gift explodes into the meadow, sends Katarine's horse flying over the top of her to land behind. Mirabella gasps. The blast came from her. Both of the violent blasts came from Jules. Mirabella stands and tries to use her gift to further push back the mist when she hears Amelia shout,
Mirabella, look out!
Mirabella turns. Too late, she sees the fallen form of Jules's familiar lying limp at her feet, taken out by Jules's own attack. Her war gift is out of control. It will not spare even her friends.
Run!
Amelia screams, but not before Mirabella is thrown sideways into a tree. Blackness swims before her eyes. She struggles to her elbows and squints. Jules has been taken to the ground. Amelia has pinned her and strikes her hard on the back of the head.
Cover!
Amelia shrieks.
Give us cover, Elemental!
Cover, Mirabella grumbles, blinking her aching eyes. With her jarred, the storm has begun to fray at the edges, but she pulls it back together, her gift singing in her veins after so many months on the mainland unused. Her lightning strike lands in the valley, cutting off the Queen's army from pursuing any retreating rebels. There is no mistaking it for natural weather, and every eye in the meadow seeks out the source. Katarine stares at Mirabella, as Mirabella stares back. Katarine can no longer feel the ache in the leg that was trapped under her horse. She no longer cares whether the mist has retreated all the way into the sea. She does not even see it when the warriors and the oracle in a yellow cloak come to spirit away the legion-cursed naturalist and her fallen cougar. All that matters is Mirabella.
Come to me!
Katarine holds out her hand.
Come to me, sister!
Mirabella backs away into the trees until she is far enough to turn and run. But she need not even do that. The mist and her lightning have taken the fight out of the Queen's guard. Not a one of them is brave enough now to follow. Not even Ro.
Cat!
Peter rides to her and leaps from the saddle. He takes her by the shoulders and presses his forehead against hers.
Cat, thank the goddess. I thought I had lost you. I thought you were lost in it.
He tugs gently and she moans.
You there,
he barks and points to the soldiers and then her horse.
Get him up! Get him off the queen!
They roll him up and he kicks out his front legs. He is not dead after all. And Peter drags her out of the way.
What happened? He asks. Cat, are you truly all right?
They made me kill her,
she whispers, as she braces against him and struggles to her feet.
The fools! They used my hand and cut the Legion curse loose.
Oh, Cat.
Peter holds her tight
as the shock wears slowly off. She is cold, all over, and herself again.